the United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. A few things to plug, and we'll get started. Asian Tea is Kratom.com. Asian Tea is Kratom, and that Asian Tea is used by people all over for everything from pain relief to anxiety to sleep or get energy. It's 100% organic. And this product has not been evaluated by the FDA and is not intended to treat, cure, or diagnose any disease or illness. And that's Life is Better on Taunton Bay. Asian Tea is Kratom. That's Asian, A-S-I-A-N, T-T-E-A, is, I-S, Kratom, K-R-A-T-O-M.com. Go check it out. Some of that Asian Kratom tea, ain't that right, Jerry? All right.
Yeah, that's pretty good to me and like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, also, 30th Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, that's April 14th through the 16th. That's this year, April 14th through the 16th, and that's OzarkUFOConference.com. Great little gig there with the UFO conference, and I love the DVDs from these conferences. I try to get them as much as possible, and they do some pretty good ones. I watch them from the telly. So that's OzarkUFOConference.com. Got a few books here to plug. Just four. I'll be quick. David Gibbons, Testament. A thrilling race to locate the legendary Ark of the Covenant from Sunday Times best-selling author. This is by Thomas Dunn Books, St. Martin's Press, the thriller. Let's see what else I got here. This guest, I might see if he can come on the show for this book. This sounds pretty interesting. The only problem is I'm scheduling for May right now, so some of them don't like to wait, but we'll find out. Book is Everything I Need to Know I Learned from in the Twilight Zone. That's Everything I Need to Know I Learned in the Twilight Zone by Mark Dawidziak. Let me spell that. Mark Dawidziak. And that's by Thomas Dunn Books, St. Martin's Press, and basically it's like a book that takes all its lessons from the Twilight Zone. It's pretty cool. I just got a hold of it, so I haven't read it yet, but I want to get him on the show and check that out. Here's a book called Off Rock by Kieran Chia. It's sci-fi. The year is 2778. Jimmy Dick is feeling dissatisfied after busting his back for a sordid interstellar mining outfit for close to two decades. Downsizing is in the wind. His ex-girlfriend supervisor is climbing up his back, and daily Jimmy wonders if he's played his last good hand. Basically, it's a sci-fi thriller from Titan Books. That's titanbooks.com. It's Off Rock. One last book. I tried to get this dude on the show, but I haven't heard back from him. Pinball Wizards and Blacklight Destroyers, The Art of Dirty Donnie Gillies. And there's some wild art here. It's a book filled with his art from shipperbooks.com. And some of his art looks like Rob Zombie or something. There's some pretty weird stuff in here. Wizards and crazy, craziness. But there's a picture here of Wizards with Dungeons and Dragons. Dice, Jay. Ooh.
Nice.
But that's all as far as plugging goes. Who's next? Oh, next week is Saul Luckman, DNA. I was just talking to him in private about my light beam experiences. He saw light beams, too. He seen light people like me, so we're going to talk about that next week. And then, the 10th. Let me check that again. Keep mixing up dates. That's what happens when you get older. You mix up stuff. Oh, I was just at the Dollar General store, and there's a big line. And where I live, it's like living in Duck Dynasty, the TV show. There's like all these people in camo everywhere, and this Dollar General waiting in line. And I look back, and it's like Duck Dynasty, as far as I can see. We're in Trump country. The little cute chick, young girl, she she was at the counter working her butt off, and everybody's complaining, and I go, you're doing a very good job, and I bless you in the name of the universe. And she laughed and goes, thank you. And then everybody looked at me like I was insane. It was pretty funny. I loved it. But let me see. Oh, February 10th is Judith the Isles. That's going to be horror fiction discussion. Like Stephen King, Lovecraft, all the masters of horror from Lovecraft of back in the day. February 17th, Saul Luckman, DNA and Lightning. February 24th, Stanley Krippner, Rolling Thunder, Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder Medicine Man. March 3rd, Jeffrey Mishlove. Find about that one. He wrote PK Man about Ted Owens and weird alien powers. March 10th, Jose Stevens, Shamanism. That's one of my first shaman dudes I ever came across. Secrets of Shamanism was the first book, I believe. I think that was my first shamanism book, Jose Stevens. So that's going to be fun. March 17th, Stephen Gray, Cannabis Spirituality. That's right. March 24th, Chuck Blackman. That's a Navy shipyard builder. He's alien experiences. March 31st, Richard Kaczynski, Aleister Crowley, occult weirdness. I'll just read the rest of April, and then that'll be it. April 7th, I'm very excited for this one. Joe R. Lansdale, the author, who helped write Hap and Leonard, the book series that inspired the television show Hap and Leonard on IFC. Also did a great movie with, what's that guy who plays Dexter? I just forgot his name. Michael Hall? Oh, he's in the movie called Cold in July. He wrote the movie Cold in July. And the guy that plays Dexter is in that movie. Also, one of my favorite movies Joe R. Lansdale wrote was Bubba Hotep with Bruce Campbell, when he plays Elvis, and it's about this mummy that grabs old people in the middle of the night and sucks their souls out of their buttocks.
Oh, God.
Have you ever seen Bubba Hotep?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, man, that's Bruce Campbell. He's Elvis in the old folks' home, and there's an ancient mummy that steals souls out of the elderly buttocks. It's like a horror comedy. That's good.
Yeah, it is. Anything Bruce Campbell is a horror comedy, and I love it. It's hilarious.
It's one of my favorites ever. April 21st, Evan Strong and Stephen Strong, Aboriginal Australian wildness, and we'll get into all kinds of Aboriginal stuff and UFO stuff and archaeology and all that.
I know those guys. Oh, research.
April 28th, Nick Sullivan, Zombie Bigfoot. And he's also in that show, The Affair on Showtime. He was in Boardwalk Empire, too. I just talked to him about that. He's like the lawyer to one of the mobsters in Boardwalk Empire on HBO. You know, Steve Buscemi and all that, the gangster show. He was in that show. That's a pretty good little gig. That's some Martin Scorsese right there, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're the lawyer, that's still a good gig. Get a Martin Scorsese.
Consigliere.
I just saw a new Martin Scorsese movie, Silence. And then Liam Nelson and God, I forget who else. But it was really good. It was about Christians going to Japan back in the day, like real back. I don't remember what year, but back in the day. Way back in the day. And let me tell you, it wasn't a good idea for Christians to go to Japan. So there's some torture scenes in there. Like, they crucified Christians, and they put them in the ocean crucified and let the waves drown them as they're crucified.
Oh.
It was pretty good, but I didn't know it had so much Christian stuff in it. It was like a little too much. It was like Passion of the Christ in Japan. It's still good, though. I liked it. All righty, we got Jay McNicholas here with us tonight.
Good evening.
It's your first show of the year, ain't it?
Yeah, this is my first show.
How's it feel? You like that juice running through you again?
Back in the groove, baby.
Bada bing, bada bang. All right. We got Jerry Avalos. It's the return of Jerry Avalos. He's been on the show before. He's co-hosted before. It's been a while. He has returned to the sacred temple of Mavis. How's it going, Jerry?
Good, good. Great to be on the air again. It's been a while in general, you know, for whatever reason. So, pretty cool. I'm excited for the show.
When was the last time he did an appearance?
Wow. Probably at least a year ago now, I think. Something like that. It's been a good little while, okay.
It's been a while for me, too. I've just gotten to where I don't like it. It's like I'm lucky to do this show and make it. Oh, God, let alone somebody else's. I'm lucky I keep up with this. I don't know if I want to be a guest anymore. I've turned down a bunch of them. I don't even think I want to be a guest. Maybe sometime, but not right now. I'm lucky to do this. So I don't need to be in the hot seat. Well, good to have you here, man. It's like old school having Jerry Avalos here. Some old school back in the day, Chris.
It's been be a while now, actually, since we first been on the air together and were introduced. It just kind of hit me the other day. It's like, wow. Time is really good.
7 years. This is the seventh year.
Yeah, I know. So that's almost a decade. I'm like, wow. That's been bothering my mind a bit. it's really, really fun, too, actually, to kind of, you know, stay in contact all these years and you know, kind of witness each other's evolution, you know. So it's been really good.
I have a goatee now, it's turning silver. It's like white. I'm like old man grandpa pants, Jeffrey Pritchett now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it does take much energy to do a show, so I feel you there in terms of, you know, sentiment a minute ago. But yeah, I mean, the year I was gearing up Universal Truth Revolution, I mean, it's a lot of work. I think that you can only understand it until you actually have to create the show and be there and do the research and have the questions just in case the guest sucks or something. All that kind of stuff. So it is a lot of work. And then, of course, offline you have all the different responses, too, that you could then have to deal with as well. So feel you there.
I had someone try to add me on Facebook this week, and their name was... What's his name? Who's the guy that shot Kennedy? The Patsy guy.
Oswald.
Yeah, that I should know that for some reason. My mind went blank. The profile was named that, and then there was a picture of Donald Trump laying on the ground as the profile picture, and I didn't accept it. It was just so creepy.
Yeah, wow.
That's pretty good. And then I went and looked again, and it was gone. So I don't know if Facebook got it or what, but that was pretty weird. That gave me the willies. But nonetheless, well, tell everybody a little bit about yourself to give some background, Jerry.
Sure, no problem. Right now what I do primarily is work on types of quantum technologies. It kind of boils down to with nanomaterials. So, you know, it sounds really, really high-tech, and it kind of is, but at the same time, it's very practical. So we have stuff, for instance, that helps reduce pollution in cars, you know, help people feel better, all with this new approach to, you know, wave mechanics and frequency science. So that's primarily what I do from, you know, day to day now. And then my background and how I wanted to even get into that, in a sense, is I was born a natural and super lucid dreamer. And so with that knowledge in terms of being able to interpret dream signs, interpret our daytime intuition, that I found works hand-in-hand with a lot of the different types of associated logic to work in psychology, as well as quantum science, especially as it relates to quantum biology. And so I didn't realize, in a sense, where my talents were until, you know, the state of the technology, in a sense, got to this point where it made it applicable. And so that's the encapsulated version, you know, what happens to a person in my position, though, can be quite intense in detail. So, and I'm sure that's what we'll be getting into, but here's an overall rundown of what I do there.
Nice. So How did you learn about all the quantum physics and stuff? Did you go to school for it? You just learn it on your own? How does one learn all that? I don't even know where to begin with that stuff.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't really either. Going through school, and by rights and purposes, I had a very normal American education. Went to university, went to some colleges, and studied quite a few different things. But it was in high school, I had taken physics the first time. And in that class, I learned a lot about the basic mechanics and the theorems that are existing. And then when my teacher introduced the idea of quanta and what the parts of the unknown aspect of physics or the anomaly that are still there, that's what got really interested in me. And even back then, as my instructor was saying, that we know very little about it. So especially back then, that would have been, 96, I guess, there's even less in public about how quantum mechanics and how to apply it. And so ultimately, I kind of knew that's why I probably shouldn't necessarily waste my time doing the physicist route. And so figured I would go more into the practical engineering, computers, and art, actually, all those put together, and coupled with my own independent studies of keeping abreast of the way this research projects are published in from universities, things like that, and having a decent understanding of what I'm looking at. It's like I'm okay at physics, if I have a problem, I'll be able to work it out. But that was the fun thing about the quantum aspect of things, is because a lot of the normal mechanics and equations don't really matter at all. So there is more about a type of direct association with cause and effect that was hard to explain. So that's where how the term spooky action at a distance that Einstein coined comes in, because there is just, why did that happen? And so that's why I was interested in. I was interested in the anomalies, and that's what I spent my private time looking into on scientific, and that's how I eventually got into what was on, the paranormal radio shows like this one and others and all the other material, because you see that if there's any sincerity in someone's research, you have to look at these experiences, because it does demonstrate the quote-unquote physics anomaly. And so that's really what kind of got me here in a lot of ways. So it's kind of like the same interest that most of the listeners have as well. Just kind of want to know a little bit more about the universe.
Definitely, and my stages of evolution, of course, which I talk about all the time in my books that I've written on the show a million times, is, the catharsis for everything for me was when I was 17 and went through testicular cancer. And then a year, I was healed from that. I've been healed over 17 years or more, and rarely get sick now. But about a year later, my dad died, and I started seeking the spiritual and occult heavily, like Dr. Frankenstein, and I began to attract experiences and UFOs, and, there's multiple witnesses who would, I had friends tell me, Jeffrey, you're attracting this stuff to you. And everywhere I moved, it would follow me, and I've seen a wide variety of different kinds of beings. And, from my experiences, I know there's quantum realms all around us, dimensions interlap with this one, intertwined, or whatever. They're here because I've seen it, so I have no doubt about it at all. I've seen it with my own eyes. And one of my more prominent experiences that continues to this day is I continue to see beings of light. I've seen them so many times I've lost count. One of the first experiences that I saw was after my dad died. I saw a being of light standing on the cloud top with a friend. And I guess it was my dad. I don't really know for sure, but or an angel. I don't know what it was, but it was a person made out of light standing on the cloud top, just plain as day. Years and years and years passed, and then there was a place called Bermuda Street in Georgia. I was out in the driveway, and I looked up in the sky, and I saw one fly through the heavens, like just fly through the sky like Superman, a person made out of light, like something out of a comic book. And I remember each one of these experiences because I test on it, and it's like it was a catharsis to see that. It's like proof that there are quantum realms around us, and what happens to us when we die is I believe we are those light beings, and we release it from this body, and it's, I guess it's what we are now, too, but it's hard to, you know, comprehend on some level. But a few years ago from this house, I had put on the audio Bible to listen to it, because sometimes I'll listen to it on TV. Like, I had Christian roots. My dad was a Baptist preacher. I was baptized. But a lot of times I run from it, because I guess a lot of people in politics and stuff make me wary of it on many levels. Like, I don't want to be reading the Bible one day and turning to Ted Cruz. That's terrifying. But nonetheless, I went outside and looked up over the house, and I saw two beams of light come out of my house, out of the roof, and fly into the heavens, just plain as day. Just two people made out of light, just go through like they were leaving my house. And, you know, we had Don Oscar on, a shaman from Peru, and he said that those beams of light, I was right about what they were, us, you know, without our bodies. And he said that in Peru they gather in crowds and watch the shining ones in the sky. And to them, it's, you know, it's something they do. It's like some ritual or ceremony. They go, let's go gather on wherever. It's a sacred spot and watch these things in the sky. So that's been one of my big eye-openers as far as the quantum realms and what's around us. And what I believe the catharsis of that, what that was for me, was when I went through chemo and cancer, I said a prayer to be a superhero. I was in the comics and Anne Rice books and all kinds of stuff. And I said a prayer to heal me and to take the pain off the earth, because I saw a little girl, some dad killed his little kid, and it was on the news, and I was like crying as I went through chemo about it. And I said a prayer to make me a superhero and take the pain off the earth, and also find love with a woman. And I was 17 and dying, so. But I believe at that particular moment, something heard me, the universe, God, aliens, whatever the hell, or whatever the heaven, and that's why I have these experiences. I'm aware to it, and it, something showed me, and I'm still processing on many levels. But what I'm curious about when it comes to, I know you've had some paranormal involvement and interest, but you've also had experiences. What were some of your big initial experiences that kind of opened you up and got you on your path? Were they spiritual experiences or both?
I'd say it is both. And it's really, this is where my story takes a very strange turn, and this is, you know, kind of a controversial part in the sense that I mentioned that I was born being able to lucid dream, and when I say I'm truly a lucid dreamer, that means not only was I just seeing the psychological symbolism of my mind and body, there was some type of external interaction or non-local interaction that I was witnessing, because I was seeing very literal representations of what would happen, say, the next day or a week from now, you know, with fair regularity. And so, and at one point in my early childhood, these different experiences, I started meeting these other characters, and this, I guess there's, you know, different things like angels, ETs, and all these things, but because it wasn't in my conscious mind what was really going on in the world, I thought it was all just, you know, myself, my symbols, my dreams, my imagination. I was a little egoic there, you know what I mean? And I'd have these adventures. You know, and some of them would be fun, and some of them I would love to forget because they weren't nice, and all these things. And so eventually, it was basically when I realized, like, okay, this is it. This that means all these other things I was experiencing, I couldn't rationalize away, has to do with a dream, where I'm seeing stuff that has to do with secret military aircraft out of Everett Air Force Base, and there was a public launch eventually that night that happened. But I had seen it, like, at the time it was happening, well, prior when they were getting it ready for launch in the early morning. And so when I woke up and I saw the synchronicity of this on the news of the exact same plane that I saw launching, it was linked to all these quote-unquote adventures of different types of paranormal sci-fi intensive. I'm like, oh, no. This could mean the rest of it is linked somehow. And that's where I started figuring out about some of these different experimentation that goes on without the public knowledge. Some people call it the super soldier program. Some people call it military abduction. I call it covert experimentation, because a lot of times it isn't necessarily the government. It's, you know, proprietary. You're like a you're like someone's property in a sense. It's a proprietary experiment. And so that's where the rabbit hole, so to speak, got intensely deeper for me. Now having to rectify this path of, like, yeah, that was probably there, the thing that you saw, kind of Tower of the Light being, that you had mentioned. And, like, instead I'm thinking it's like, whoa, it's kind of a dream thing. There's a heavy disassociative kind of psychology going on with that, to create this divide in my conscious and my logic. Okay, oh, no, that's just global. That's just me tripping out about something or creating or something, right? And so that moment with that, with experimental aircraft, was really kind of, in my mind, what catalyzed a lot of it in terms of the day-to-day stuff and what really ended up kind of really making everything a lot more fun, but intense. So I guess that's kind of that would be the main experience, as well as having some other ones in terms of having dream experiences with departed relatives, kind of letting me know that you might want to change this about your diet, and you might want to change this about your attitude, or else you're going to not feel like the result. So I kind of had that quintessential Ebenezer Scrooge kind of thing happen to me too. So there's been quite a few different experiences, I guess. So that's really kind of what just given me the knowledge to be effective at what I do now, grow as a scientist, grow as an intuitive, and such. To where now I have so much fun communicating some of the mechanics of these things that were once hard to explain, but now we have enough evidence been put together to be like, oh, okay, now that's now a technique that could be duplicated. So that's one of the things for me and my team is being able to show people intuitive practices that will really work if you can verify, et cetera, et cetera.
So you were taken by these organizations? Is that what you're saying as well?
Yeah. And it's hard to say exactly who, honestly. There's obviously military bases, military type projects, but then there is also apparently some types of private corporation involvement as well. And so sometimes, and that's the part that was really hard for me to rectify in my mind. It's like, when the hell was I kidnapped, right? And then you realize, like, how many times did I really know where my body was when this was happening? You know what I mean, kind of just assume that it was there, but how do I know? And so that opens up a possibility. And then also I have dreams where I thought were dreams of me getting up and walking down the street and then coming home and being in my bed again, but then I'm waking up like cold, like I've just been outside. And so for me, I'm just like, well, that's kind of strange, but maybe I'm just cold. And that's what my mind thought up. But now it makes more sense in terms of like some of the psychotronic entrainment that can happen and some of the basically drugs that they can sneak into you too, for that matter. Basically make you do what they want. And so,
did some of them pretend to be aliens? Like, I've heard stories about them, like, dressing up like that. Was that ever an experience you had?
There is false memories like that, but now, in my experience, and I don't know about other people's, I'm sure this happened too, but it seems to me like a lot of it was, visually induced. Because fooling the mind with drugs and other kinds of pulsing equipment, I guess you can say, to basically scramble what's going on in my brain, basically, to overlay their projections of what they wanted me to see. So it's almost like an induced hallucination. So I'm not sure, maybe it happens when people dress up in costumes and stuff like that, but I can totally see where it's not necessary with the right technical knowledge and medical knowledge to induce a specific type of hypnosis and kind of illusion. So that made more sense to me than rectifying my experiences than what I've heard or how I've heard it explained before, in terms of some of those false memories.
I'm certainly believe that those agencies exist, because I had an experience with one, but it was not as severe as what other people have been through. When I was having mass UFO sightings in Georgia, and it seemed like they were attracted because of me, that I'd opened up a gateway or something. Some type of military agency came out, and there was a silent helicopter over the house that made no noise with a big cockpit. I don't even know if I saw blades on it, but it made no noise, but it was shaped like a helicopter and the cockpit or something. It was just a big, long cockpit. You could see the guy's whole body, and he was like in kind of like, it looked like an Air Force uniform or, you know, Top Gun kind of deal. And he waved at me and a friend mockingly, and it shot off, but made no noise at all. And that, you know, that could have been one of those agencies. They could have got me and stowed me in the Montauk dungeon or whatever, but they didn't, thank God. But they came out because of those UFOs to investigate what was going on, but they never talked to me. They never came face to face, but I saw that one thing over my house, and it was over the roof, like close to the roof. So, I mean, he had to belong to something, and what I'm guessing is some kind of agency came out because they were picking up those UFOs on their radar or whatever, and they sent something out. What they sent out was, you know, something I'd never, it was just silent. It made no noise.
I've seen something similar, because I actually live not too far from a naval depot, and it also factors in, so, you know, that whole, my whole, you know, experience with everything. And so there's been times, you know, I've just been in my room looking out a window, they do a lot of different maneuvers around anyway, and I see a helicopter go by pretty close, really low, and it made no sound. And it's like, and I'm used to seeing and hearing these things, and when they're that close, they usually rattle, you know, the house and stuff, and this one just kind of like, okay, that was different. So I've seen that too, and just in terms of like some normal operations, quote unquote, and that's what makes sense now, some of the different stories you are hearing from vets who do start talking about stuff, or even just, you know, war stories from civilians in these areas with just crazy, you know, Western weapons and stuff.
I remember one of the weirdest UFO sightings I ever had. I was walking down a street here in Florida in Lynn Haven, and I was just walking down this country street, and this big, like, rusty orange ball floated by. And it wasn't a blimp. It was, like, too heavy. Like, I don't even understand how it was. Like, it looked like a garbage can UFO. It was orange and rusty, and a ball just floating through the air. I still don't know what the hell it was. There was nothing attached. It wasn't attached to that copter or anything. It was like Oscar the Grouch would live in it or something. That was one of my weirdest, but I still don't know what the hell that was.
See, to me, when I hear stories like that, that confirms the validity of the science that a lot of us, I think, are into, you know, this show and such, know about. I have a company who we've done our tests and such on a relatively mild form of this type of hyperdimensional, I guess you could say, technology. And I can imagine if you had more money and had the intention to try to make something fly, how it could be done. And we've done a little experiment ourselves with, high voltage running through certain types of materials to make them levitate and move. So I could see how theoretically, you know, something that would do something like that would probably be kind of ugly in the middle, you know, to make it fly around. And this is one of the things that, you know, over, especially as I started becoming more aware that my involvement in these programs, you know, characters of, you know, different varieties started approaching me, and I started meeting them from different agencies, current and not. And they would talk about these things and say how ultimately there's basically Bond villains are kind of like the world's biggest problem. Not the politics, not the drugs, not the blah. There's someone who really is serious about trying to kill everyone, and probably not necessarily all the people in charge, unless they have their own plans that are conflicting with those plans and they're fighting. Doesn't that sound like we always hear? And so to me, it makes a lot of sense, and that's one of the things where, I do challenge people who consider themselves scientists and academics to use that method to truly investigate some of these anomalies. So I'm not saying everything is true, but there's certain things that you just can't, like, prove no matter what your knowledge is, or how smart you are. it's unless you start factoring in these other things. And it isn't magic. It's mechanics of the universe, really. And so that's why I think all of us have that intrinsic drive to be like, how come aliens aren't out right now, or how come we're not flying in cars and all sorts of stuff? Because, yeah, it can be done. So.
Definitely. Another validation about some kind of agency being out there and watching us is one time I had been on the phone, the landline here, and I said I was going to shut my landline off because I was having some financial trouble. Well, out of nowhere, I found out someone put a $2,000 credit on my phone to keep it on. And there was no one I knew that did that. I didn't have any. If someone did that for me that I knew, they would have told me. It just magically appeared on my phone. I had them send me a check, and I paid my land taxes and went on a shopping spree. And what I believe is someone put that $2,000 on there to keep my phone on so they could keep listening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It all factors into the phone marketing plan, honestly.
Yeah. Well, let's turn over to Jay here. I want to give him some street time here. And, of course, we got an 8-minute break coming up in a little bit, and then we got the other hour. So, what's up, Jay?
Hey, not too much, Jeff. Jerry, in your when you're talking about your background, you mentioned wave energy studies. Are you talking about energy waves, I imagine?
All kinds of waves, in the sense of energy waves, mechanical waves, pulse electronics, so anything that has a frequency.
Are you familiar with Robert Lazar?
Oh, my God, the name's ringing a bell, but not the work right now.
All right, well, he was kind of more popular in the late 80s, early 90s. He was interviewed by that guy from KLAS, Las Vegas TV. I forget the reporter's name. But he came out with the, nowadays, in the last 15, maybe 20 years, gravity as a wave has been a popular theory. But 30 years ago, in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't even heard of. And he came up with this idea. I don't know if he didn't come up with it, but he was in a back engineering program at in Groom Lake, just south of Groom Lake at Papoose Lake, what they call Section 4 or Sector 4. And
yeah,
he mentioned that.
Yeah, actually, I do remember. Sorry, I just didn't remember. But yeah, I do. I'm used to hearing Bob Lazar, so I'm like, Robert Lazar. So yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, same guy, Bob Robert Lazar. So he mentioned that the machine that he was looking into had a wave energy guide system that underneath the main level, there were three, for lack of a better term, three bottles. That would refocus gravity waves to make the machine fly in an atmosphere, and then two of the bottles would angle up perpendicular to the third bottle, so it could essentially make a time warp or space warp type of like a Star Trek type machine and travel nearly or faster than light to other stars and other planets. So, I was wondering if you have any kind of work in that field is looking at that as a propulsion system yourself.
Gotcha. Yeah, actually, that's a great question. And yeah, Bob Lazar, actually, for a while, we were actually getting some of our material from his company, United Nuclear. So I was pretty fond about that, too. What I saw from him, even just before, before I even really looked into some of the more advanced aspects of what we're talking about now, when I heard what he was explaining about element 115 and the bombardment method, theoretically, it sounded just as good as anyone else's to me. And I thought it was funny how you mentioned the gravity wave concept, and so many people are like, oh, that's preposterous, because they're trying to sell their graviton theory, which basically has gravity be like an atom. But there's no real good... Yeah, there's no real evidence of that, and as we saw recently in the news this past year, there's been more confirmations of those gravity waves. And then I think it's hilarious to me about the 115 thing, because I remember hearing these people saying that how they're so scientifically minded because they have the physics degree and this and that, and I talked about it's impossible to have 115, and now I think the element's like up to 138 or something like that, and they have element 115 on the regular periodic table. So that's one of the things to naysayers and all the other conspiracy theorists out there who are you know, the bombardment of these people, now you can kind of point to that and say, ha-ha. See, so it is possible in that sense. And because you're dealing with a nuclear material, and nuclear materials, I guess you could say without getting crazy into the atomic physics, they have a lot of kinetic energy. Yeah, and so it's releasing a gamma burst. And so that gamma burst is what, you know, can kill us over time and stuff like that. And so there's ways that you can utilize that. And right now, primarily here, all we're doing with it is putting it in water and boiling water and turning turbines. And so this is why people think, oh, it can't be used for anything else. But, oh, yeah, I'm sure it can. So, and the concept that what I've seen with Bob Lazar's drawing made sense as it related to different, I guess you could say, dimensional spaces. And when I say dimensional spaces, I'm talking about the wavelengths of light, or perceived light in that sense. And this gets easier to perceive when I'm sure everyone around is now starting to see these LED blinking things where it just looks like blinking LEDs on a stick, and when you move back and forth, you have like a happy face, or there's words written, or something like that, right? Think of that as our reality too. And so when you're moving around in, you know, this dimension, in one dimensional space, if it has three, you know, axes, and that's what you're working with, it made sense to me that two of those emitters would be all you need, because it's relatively flat as it relates to a time vector or duration. And so when you get the third one, that's kind of like the reactor now in time. And so that focuses, and that in a sense, it's more about when you want to get somewhere more than like how long it takes you or what distance is traveled. So, and that's where it gets tricky. So as you get closer to the speed of light, in classic physics and thermodynamics, the more undefined this becomes. And so in that sense, the time dilation that's also accounted for, even in NASA's rockets, like they know that they're, I think it's something like 11 seconds that they have to adjust when they launch a shuttle, because the shuttle is going to be reading 11 seconds faster than what's going here. And so things like that, you can say, are time vectors. And those, that, to me, that engine design and what you're talking about the operation made sense. And I've had a chance to speak with John Lear, too, about that whole scenario. Now, that was pretty interesting because, you know, John Lear is an aviation expert. And so, he's describing some of these things and, you know, in technical matter too, it makes more sense. And it makes sense why, you know, that would be one of the areas of research and study in potential uses of nuclear material. And so when you hear different, you know, new conventional, you know, warcraft, shall we say, and they say they're nuclear powered, it's like I'm kind of wondering, is it boiling water or is it something like this, you know?
Yeah, I've heard quite a few things from John Lear. I haven't actually spoken to him. I think he's now since passed. But he's famous for one of his quotes. He's a son or grandson of Bill Lear, who invented the Learjet. And my most favorite quote of his is he says, if you can imagine it or you've seen it on a science fiction show, we can already do it, or something to that effect. And I think that's pretty fantastic. So that means they have lightsabers, phasers, and transportation devices like on the Enterprise. But you also, I'm glad you mentioned the Element 115, because back when I first heard of Bob Lazar, I had just graduated high school. It was 1984 when I graduated, and he came on the scene another 5-6 years later. And I remember, I was good in science, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't take a career in science, but I remember the table of elements when I was in high school. There were the normal ones we have, and then there was like two little blow-up boxes that kind of like came off. They were like you know, in the diagram when they have something, they blow up and they zoom in on an area. It was like that, two lines, and I think it was like elements 109 to 125 or something like that. But in there, they had all these elements, and they had element 115 is labeled as UUP, and there was no name to it whatsoever. So just UUP, and the others had like three or two or four digit lettered names. And then just, what is it, 2015, they put element 115 officially on the table of elements, and they called it Unum Pentium, and it starts with two U's and then there's a P, Unum Pentium. So I was like, wow, I saw that element 30-some years ago, and it's now it's for real. So.
yep, that's true. Yeah. And that was one of, I think by the time, if I'm not mistaken, that's one of the things that I saw too, because I mean, I kind of mentioned I was in science in high school in 96, and I remember seeing that, the breakout box, and our teacher explaining to us what those are, and basically what that is that they've created these elements, but they aren't stable for X amount of time. And so once they stabilize it for X amount of time, then they consider it a periodic element. And so that, so over time, you know, science advances and we learn how to compress, you know, agitated material a lot better, and we get crazy strong nuclear material.
And according to Lothar, 115, the way he explained the nuclear elements was that the lower levels, they're highly unstable, like, you know, uranium and polonium and all those that we use for bombs are extremely unstable and extremely volatile, and in their natural state, if you touch them, you get radiation poison. But as you go higher up, they become stable. Element 1 is one of those that's stable. You can actually touch and handle and manipulate without fear of becoming radioactively poisoned, and then they use it for the energy, energy gravity wave engines and the spacecraft he was looking at. And then he says later on, even further up, past like 120, 125, they become even more unstable. So at some point, according to him, we're going to have nuclear fissionable materials that are so devastating that just one of them could probably destroy the entire planet. So I'm wondering if you know anything about those. Because if we've made 115, it's a man-made element, what kind of things can we make in the future that would be just absolutely horrible?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, actually. Because this is kind of proof to putting that the fear that you're seeing on TV is a marketing plan, because we can get destroyed so many ways from Sunday that don't involve missiles flying into space. And because of even things like you're mentioning here, these unstable elements, and considering that pretty much people travel all over the world, there's probably already enemy bombs planted in your country anyway. So, you know, but there's a reason why they don't go off. And because there is, you know, this high tech, and it's all training to them. And case in point, you know, I've done some research on the dark web, and I want to see are these stories you're hearing in the news really true? And what I found is, yeah, they're true of what's there, but there's also a bunch of stuff there not reporting. Like, one of the things that was very disconcerting to me was how, for a while there appeared to be a large supply of nuclear material being sold on the dark web at these various places that most people think about are just for drugs or just for whatever. And the thing was, you could see that there was more demand for that than some popular drugs. I'm like, whoa. And not only why is there a demand, and, you know, who has this? You know, kind of nothing after that, but... and what are they doing? And I think that's obviously what these other entities, the people in charge, the power, whatever you want to call it, are also doing. And we hear that from other people who've been inside because they track all this. And what that told me, though, because I don't think these are bombs, because that's one of the things, it's one of the most, like, lamest ways to use that material, as we're just talking about propulsion, right? So it could be something like that, propulsion, because remember I mentioned the James Bond villains, right? James Bond villains might do something like that. Or also, what made more sense to me was basically have, like, rogue nuclear reactors. So that would make more sense to me, like, why would there be such a high demand for this nuclear material? Because I can imagine someone's probably making a nuclear reactor. You can make a very crude one. They would still be able to power, you know, a large building, any major corporation building, you know, and this is one of the things now being in more in the business side myself, more businesses than I believe people realize are self-sufficient. They're not running off the grid. They got their own hydrogen generators. You know, one of the companies that we're working with actually creates awesome generators using water. And this is the trend that a lot of major businesses are looking at, because they're like, why are we paying, you know, Edison, basically, when we know we can do this with X amount of money? And so that's, they all kind of work in together, because some people really into nuclear. But But yeah, in terms of, and so just kind of getting back a little more directly to the question, is there a bomb there with more volatile nuclear elements that are smaller? Yeah, it sounds like it. And this is where I think we all hear these different stories coming from various whistleblowers or people that just tell us confidentially about mini-nukes or mini-nukes that don't leave a residual radiation that isn't necessarily a neutron bomb or something like that. So I'm sure there's some pretty hardcore applications of that in terms of weaponry. And that's one of the United States spends the most money on, after all.
It just makes me wonder what kind of scary things we can make, and we've got a lot already anyway. But you also mentioned water generators, and this may even be way off topic, I don't know, but have you heard of magnetohydrodynamic engines?
Yes, but I haven't necessarily seen many demonstrations.
I haven't either. It's probably a real thing, but it's more fictional. It was in a Tom Clancy book, Hunt for Red October. And essentially what it is an underwater jet engine with no moving parts. And the Red October had that as a propulsion system, and when it was on, the sub was essentially completely silent, but sounded like either a biological creature, a whale, if you will, or as a magma type, or a seismic event underwater. So I was wondering if you know much about those, but it says you don't have much experience in it. But I think that would be kind of a neat thing, is to have your boat and or submarine with an underwater jet that can go the speed of an airliner across the ocean. Imagine what it would do for travel. I mean, planes are fairly safe, but how much more fun would it be to travel across the ocean in less than a day?
Yeah, definitely. And to me, it's very plausible. Modulating density, is another way you can kind of state waveform, and in that sense, you can call it like a cause and effect in relation to waveform. So this is where, an engine-less turbine makes sense to me if you have the shape right and the density right. And so that's where, certain types of magnetic elements could easily be employed, especially in the ocean, because you have salt water. So you can utilize that salt to induce electricity too in a bunch of different ways. And so that ionization would create thrust. And so it all sounds very possible to me. Right now, I heard that I might even just try to do like a little fun sub, mini sub. You see what happens? because that does sound easier than trying to push through the air. In that one experiment that I mentioned, myself and some associates did, we had a little small triangular kind of like a craft-looking thing that was maybe about 8 inches wide. And we had to use essentially like the dangerous part of the inside of an old CRT monitor to get enough juice to make it buzz around and move and stuff. So that's why a lot of these types of anti-gravitic or whatever you want to call them types of systems have engineering hurdles. There was a power needed. And it's not to say it's impossible. It's just it takes a lot of resources and, someone who's skilled to overcome them in a way that, would actually work.
Yeah, this is a very fun and exciting time to be alive. There's so much awesome technology coming out. There's other stuff that we've had for years that don't want to come out. It's absolutely mind-boggling. I can't imagine what kind of stuff we actually have that the government is keeping under the table that, on the realms of Star Trek with spaceships and weaponry systems and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's where it was hard for me to rectify in my experience, because, and honestly, like, a lot of the stuff I remember that dealt with craft and high military things is like, you just have to liken them to movies or your imagination, because there really isn't much to indicate the similarities other than the insignias and overall bland sort of visual style. In terms of what I've seen, is other aspects of things that, say, aren't necessarily just machinery, but concepts like possessions are also very, very real, and they're utilized, and that's one of the bigger problems, you can say, in the espionage category of, government and politics, and especially business. So And that concept most people think of is like The Exorcist and, you know, church and this and that. And that stuff does happen. Yeah, and that was even hard for me to follow in the sense, you know, not necessarily believing in any one specific religion, but that's the point. Someone else does. And so that form, that thought, is alive in some part of this universe. And so in that sense, that's another dimension, and how we see there's dimensional crossing. And so these kind of thought forms of just malicious creatures can definitely enter people. And I think, you know, so if you're wondering sometimes, like, that makes a little sense about when we're out at the bar and my friend just decided to do that, it's like, yeah, it probably was something else or someone else. Because that's the other thing that we don't, a lot of people don't realize, how much our bodies influence each other's thoughts, and we do the will of other people. And so that, just observing that day to day, and then you think, what if I have a lot of money and a lot of smart people to replicate this as a weapon? And so that's where you get, honestly, people like me being sort of experimented on, or you get technology in frequency applications and directed energy. And so, like radio waves. And this is something that, you know, the poet really should know, is that, you know, when Snowden talked about the, you know, system prism, okay, that it listens fine, but I don't think people understand the extent of which. Because, and I'm talking just regular scientists, the capacity to be able to listen from your power cord is 100% feasible, and I'm sure there was a pendant probably going back to the 70s. So even your wall socket is now a microphone. So that, and that's old technology. You know, now there's ways to tell where your eyes are looking at on your screen based on the pixel calculation. So you can know what you're actually staring at the computer. And so somewhere, this is all going into a database. And it's not necessarily like someone sits there and watches the whole time or anything. It just goes there, and then the event they did, they can pull it up. So this is where a lot of the times when, you know, people say, oh, I was looking at this conspiracy website, and then it shut me off, and I got a weird phone call. That isn't necessarily the boogeyman or a man in black standing there doing that. It's a computer. You know, you tripped off some AI flags, and sending out a response. Because your feedback to that response is going to categorize a different way in that database. And you can try to play against it, but probably seen all the tricks. So, you know, just be yourself. Have fun.
It sounds very like when I was younger, you know, before the laptop and the desktop computer were even a thing, really, the same thing was said of speakers and television, the tube television, not the LCD and the LED panels, mind you, and they may have that ability as well, but it was said that to us that the CIA can reverse the polarity on your television and turn it from a TV to a video camera. And they'd only have like a 2 or 3 foot focal range, so you had to be like right in front of it for them to see you. But if you were sitting, like I was a kid, I'd sit right in front of the TV and watch my cartoon. Allegedly, the CIA could look through my TV and see me doing that. The same with the speakers inside the TV or inside your radio. It can reverse the polarity on those. And this is true. You can actually do this in real life. Take a speaker and reverse it and make it a microphone. You can take a microphone and reverse its polarity and it's a speaker. So, very, very weird technology that we have going on in this country and all over the planet.
Absolutely, and yeah, that is true. And just, you know, that reverse polarity, in a sense, you can say it's a transducer. You know, for those listening, the that cone that moves up and down when the speaker's on, and basically you're using the same thing the other way, and so it sends electrical impulse back down that wire, and it's completely plausible. And I've had contact, from different alphabet agencies let me know that, you know, in terms of hacking computers, it doesn't matter about having an air gap either. Sorry, you can, you know, it can go back all the way to early computers. So if you think, you know, using XP as an air gap or Linux with an air gap, it's not going to matter. Because how we're showing those impulses, you can do that by satellite. Yeah, you can do it from the cell phone towers. You can basically kind of remote influence the machinery by modulating the frequency pulse from it to actuate something on the computer. And so this might make a lot of sense why, you know, and they do it to everyone. So it's not, you know, it's just, they watch everyone. So if you hear your TV kind of half turn on or something like that, there's probably an AI doing a sweep. And it's not being paranoid. It's being informed, honestly. Just don't let it make you paranoid, or else you might do some cool things.
Will my TV know if I'm looking at a superhero cosplay porn?
Yeah, absolutely. Because then this is why those ads from Amazon and eBay and other Chinese companies magically appear, whether you did something on the computer or even on the TV, or even said something out loud a bunch of times. Because there's little things that, for instance, this is an easy one, and check this out. Okay, anyone who's listening right now, be aware of this. I'm going to say some words that's going to activate some of your cell phones and your computers and your cars. And okay, Google. Stop, Google. Okay, because you have to do that or else it's going to record you. It's going to think you're trying to send a message. It's going to think you're trying to give a command somewhere. And this is also how videos can also hijack your phone and put something on it or steal information, because you can be watching a YouTube video that has those commands just below hearing, but the phone's going to pick it up and it's going to turn on and go to the website.
You don't look like you.
Hey, guys, we got to go on break. Everybody, you're listening to United Public Radio 107.7 FM New Orleans. We'll be back in about 8 minutes with Jerry Avalos. We'll see you very shortly.
Rock me gently, rock me slowly, take good care of you.
just close my eyes again. Climbed aboard the Dreamweaver train. Trying to take away my worries of today. And leave tomorrow behind.
This is Michael Angley of Michael Angley Live, Discovery Paranormal, and a daily update with Michael Angley. For the best news and commentary, tune in to Michael Angley Live every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. For the best paranormal talk in town, tune in to Discovery Paranormal every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. And check out UPRN, United Public Radio Network, every day for the daily update with Michael Angley. All on United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.7 New Orleans.
Hi, I'm Joe Mentaldo, and you're listening to United Public Radio.
You are listening to United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com. 107.5, New Orleans.
You want to learn about aliens, extraterrestrials, UFOs, visitations, military abductions? Join Joe Mentaldo on Wednesday night, 8 to 10 p.m. for his episodes of UFO Undercover.
The UPRN family of shows would like to take a moment to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in to UPRNTalkRadio.com along with 107.7 FM New Orleans. Broadcasting on multiple platforms like Live365, Ustream, and Shoutcast has made the UPRN the longest running, highly rated, and best source of quality, unique programming that is not afraid of the status quo in alternative media. This station has a solid course of shows and hosts that refuse to get stuck in a rut or be overrun by a groupthink mentality, because station owner, host, and iCar founder Joe Mentaldo knows the value of letting his talented stable of hosts grow uninhibited. In this genre, that's an accomplishment which many in alternative radio are striving for but are left consistently wanting. This is all made possible because of you, the listener, that tunes in live every night, who can tell the difference that independent thinking makes. The best way to show our appreciation is to thank you and continue to allow our listeners the ability to download the archives of all the shows free of charge on iTunes, Podbean, and SoundCloud. No monthly fees, no cost to download individual shows, and none of the constant hassling for donations. That's the UPRNradio.com difference. So stick around. There's much more to come with new shows on the way. For now, feel free to join your favorite show live in the Pal Talk chat room, easily accessible off UPRNTalkRadio.com, and share the experience of listening live with other listeners from around the world. So thanks for listening, and thank you for being a part of the UPRNTalkRadio.com family of listeners.
Come check out Christina George's new show, Paranormal Connections, only on United Public Radio, Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. See you Monday. Hi, come check out Christina George's new show, Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond, Thursday night, 8 p.m. See you Thursday, Jeff.
Hi there, this is Dave Scott from Spaced Out Radio, and you're listening to the United Public Radio Network live on 107.5 FM in New Orleans and 160 countries around the world. You are listening to United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans.
You are invited to the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show every Friday night on United Public Radio Network from 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time, 12 to 1 a.m. Eastern Time, with your spiritual warrior goddess, Kathy Bilski. Kathy will share all the old truths the Illuminati tries to keep secret. Kathy also gives you the opportunity to join in with planetary healing light work that will help us manifest World Enlightenment 2016. So let's get high and fly into new possibilities. So join Kathy every Friday night on UPRN, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show. A very powerful happening.
You are listening to United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans.
Spaced Out Radio is glad to be part of the United Public Radio Network family as we round out your night 7 days a week starting at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. Our goal is to give you that paranormal listening option that you've been missing all these nights. You can join me, Dave Scott, Monday through Friday, and James Tyson on the weekend. We promise to deliver the fastest 3 hours of radio right to wherever you are. And check out our website as well, Spaced Out Radio.
Welcome to the Church of Mavis Radio Show. It's Friday night. Listen to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM New Orleans. It's Friday night. Everybody go out and get a little beaver tonight. It's Friday night. All right. We're back. I'm crazy. That's right. That's how I do it. The madness rolls. So what, you know, my take on everything right now in the United States is this is the craziest I've ever seen it ever since I've been here, since I was incarnated onto this realm in 1974. But politically, just it's totally insane. And I've always been mostly a Democrat, but I'm trying to leave that party and not be anything. But it's like even if the next election comes up, you said you have these weird rules that I wouldn't be able to vote. If it, I don't know, there's rumors that Bernie might go Democrat completely. I'd vote for him then, of course, because that's who I voted for to begin with. But my big thing is right now I see the right-left paradigm, just the division that it causes in itself. We're already separated by race, sex, and, you know, religion, and, you know, left and right. And the way people, and I've been guilty of it, of course, but, and I still am, you know, with the whole left-right thing. I get caught up in it. But I, at least I see the cloud pops now, and I see it for what it is, how it divides people, and who designed it to do that. Because, I mean, people are like, it's like their own, they're a bunch of hillbillies rooting for their favorite sports team, you know, this left-right thing. Left-right! And it, I guess it's, I read in a Courtney Brown book, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he wrote some weird remote viewing books, and he said something about the left-right situation extends into space and got to some weird reptilian alien crazy with white albinos being the right and then the green ones being the like some weird space, like it's a disease, this left-right thing. It's like a condition, a universal mental illness, the left-right, you know, division and paradigm and everything.
Marketing plan. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was for Bernie and, you know, didn't turn out the way I planned, and now we got the Pure. And he does seem like that to me. I try to be positive about it, but he seems like a fascist. I mean, I hate to say it. It's what he seems like. It seems like Saddam just moved into the White House. I'm waiting for George Clooney to go missing. I'm waiting for George Clooney and whoever says that you think bad about him to end up dead and go missing. But nonetheless, I'm kind of curious what that Gary Avila's brain thinks about this situation with Trump. What's your view on it, your perception of it right now? Let's get to that brain of yours, that quantum brain.
Yeah, and thanks, yeah, because you know, I do follow you know, geopolitical movements for a bunch of different reasons. And yeah, I'm pretty surprised, honestly, at what I'm seeing, not only from the president, but also from the populace. And even populists, you would think, would be a little bit more objective. You know, and it goes to show that idealism, that quote-unquote alien disease, so to speak, that's affecting people's minds, that puts everyone against each other for an idealism or a ghostism. And because, I mean, considering, you know, you got Trump with a list of conflicts of interest. And if this was, say, a Democratic president, he would be yelling and screaming about this, about impeachment, all this other stuff. So there's blatant hypocrisy. I mean, the funny thing about it, and there's even things like the Red Cross. I mean, he just went to the Red Cross ball, which is technically a private entity that receives government funding, or doesn't receive government funding, excuse me, I'm like, they receive public funding through donations. But the whole thing is, it's also the entity that it handles, say, blood donations and drives for the government. And so He's sitting in a position of power there, and now he's the president, and now he's also in charge of who does what. So that's one of the Red Cross, and he also has HUD payments that come to him. Yeah, he has his hotels that obviously have conflicts of interest, especially when the Muslim ban doesn't involve the places where his hotels are actually bought. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it is a type of dictatorship, in a sense, when you have these blatant things going on, especially when you also have all of his family has, you know, these positions of power and stuff like that. It's almost like he's treating everything like a mafia business, you know, and it's just not going to work. Because there's just too many laws in our Constitution even. So he's going to find that he's going to run into problems with his other legislators. And then the public's going to get a little upset about this too, considering if some of these moves he's making are against other major corporate entities who have just as much, if not more, power to do their will than Trump does, even as the American president. So there is a lot of things that you can see this man is moving specifically for himself. And he's not, and that's why I think it's hilarious, and to me, in the alternative and conspiracy crowd, and they're saying that Trump's going to be the guy who reverses all this and that, and then you look at his cabinet, and it's pretty much the same thing as every other administration, you know, pick and choose from the same people who everyone was crying about, you know, 4 years ago, 8 years ago, same people, You know, except this time it's more bold. It's more bold. This is for my interests only, as opposed to, say, like the Bush administration, especially, which was very sly about it. You know, they had a bunch of different corporate entities, and they had a bunch of different, you know, buffers between that. And not so much with Trump. He has his name on the building. And where do we see that other than in other countries with dictators or in movies about dictators and the dictator's business, the dictator's grocery store, the dictator's this and that, you know? And so that's why it's not that outlandish as people think to equate him to a dictator or fascism and, you know, whatever the term is, because it's kind of looking that way, you know? And his positioning, you know, in terms of geopolitical situation, is creating obviously more conflicts for the United States than any of the public really wanted. We're all tired of these wars anyways, and here he is saber-rattling, looking to commit, basically trying to entice more. I know that, you know, America, we do war pretty well, and so, you know, but we're trying to, you know, change our economy a bit here. And so on that note, this is kind of why it doesn't make sense about the Russia thing a lot of ways, unless you kind of look at things at in a longer view. Because what does Russia give America? What do they do? They're not even necessarily our big threat to the world. It's like right now it's Muslims, apparently. Yeah, next is going to be asteroids, and then after that, aliens, of course. But now, what it looks to me is that you have a president who is going to run into some legal problems. And he's making an alliance with Russia, one of the people we have a tentative understanding with. And Russian national first lady, it starts looking like a spy. You know what I mean? It starts looking like someone who's infiltrated. Especially knowing his dad was, or his great-granddad was part of the underworld and moving opium and prostitutes. You know, so it sounds like it's old money that way, and I could see the style of business. He does it like a mafia guy. But meanwhile, everyone before this was talking about who? China. Why are we worried about China? And why would China be worried about us? Because we're each other's biggest customers. You know, China isn't going to bomb America. It's kind of like everyone shooting the customers at Walmart. It's just not a good idea for business. And China, if anything, manages their country like a business. So to me, what I'm seeing is more like a second USSR fall, or even, well, a second Russia fall, and a type of gentle revolution in America as we, the basically the public demand certain things. For instance, and this is one moment in time that I think is overlooked too much in American history, during the bubble, the financial bubble with the real estate, right? At one point, sheriff's departments across America stopped serving evictions. You know, for a good chunk of time, it was like a good two years, I think, at least, where they weren't serving evictions because of the fluctuating interest rate. And so, and when I'm watching this during that happening, you get the normal rhetoric of, oh, the police are going to turn on the people, they're going to round everyone up, and it's going to be steam camps. And in fact, the opposite happened. They stood up for us because they're like, because they knew people were in the same position. And they knew that the different financial industry people were the ones getting away with it for free. And so that's what also kind of scares me when I hear Trump saying he's going to loosen bank regulations and tax regulations for corporations. Okay, and just let listeners know, I have a corporation. I'm a C corporation for what we do, and I'm just letting you guys know that it's not that difficult. You know what I mean? In terms of the taxes, the laws, it's pretty simple. Just don't commit fraud, basically. Don't commit fraud. You'll probably be okay. Just keep track of what you're doing and report it. You know? And the taxes aren't even necessarily that bad. They're actually better than individual taxes on our income. So I'm kind of wondering, like, how many more breaks do these guys need? And that tells me that they have horrible business models, with people skimming everywhere they can in terms of siphoning money. And so that's indicative of American business that we're all trying to change. I mean, our company is going to change too, a base of American business to how we run it. We're not going to run like other people. We're going to run how it makes sense. And we've seen so many more companies out there. We're running into a lot of different companies that people, you know, actually use their services every day, you know, because we deal with truck companies and stuff like that too. And they don't necessarily think like these banking institutions, you know, where everyone's skimming a little fee off of everything. And that's kind of the administration style that Trump is bringing. You know, and it seems like it's even more bold-faced cronyism. And, you know, myself, I kind of just want to say, that my political party is, George Carlin and Bill Hicks party, because I just realized all these people are lying. They're all lying, and you can't trust them. And usually because there's industrialists who are essentially creating the agenda, whether the president is aware of it or not. And kind of like how you hear also, you have generals who get elected, who've been there forever, who tend to have a higher security clearance than the president, also setting up scenarios in a sense that the president now has to make a decision, but the decisions are kind of stacked. So it's made so the situation has to be this way. So that's one of the things to keep in mind going forward in the future here, is that no matter how bad it looks, there's someone's plan, and you don't necessarily have to go, with the pitchforks and torches, because someone wants you to do that. They're expecting you to do that, because they're going to commoditize off you. They're not going to kill you or stop you. They're just going to promote it and get business out of it. Case in point, Dakota Pipeline, which I think is hilarious, too, considering it's funny that Trump owns stock in that energy company that's making the pipeline. So that's another thing that I thought was just hilarious watching people in the conspiracy and alternative news, all about the pipeline protest, saying Trump is going to change everything for the better, and then he comes in and gets all those people out and starts the pipeline working,
What is his perspective on the earth? It's just like drain it dry. It seems like there's nothing. There's no respect or appreciation or awe or anything. It's just stick a straw in it, suck it dry in the name of the almighty dollar. God bless you. Jesus loves you. And it's, abolish the EPA, run the pipeline through Standing Rock. He doesn't care about the earth. Republicans don't care about the earth. They just want to drain it dry. That's why the earth should cleanse them. But hopefully, unfortunately, when it chooses to cleanse, it's going to take out everybody, probably. It can't aim. But if only it could aim. But his view on the earth pretty much seems dark ages, if anything. I mean, there's nothing coming out of him about doing anything positive for the earth at all. Just use and abuse. That's what I'm seeing, right? Is that what you're seeing as well?
Pretty much. I mean, because in one hand, in terms of even this is what I'm saying, even his business philosophy is faulty, and other entities are also seeing this. Because, for instance, now the common belief is that Republicans really don't care about the environment, et cetera, et cetera, which is probably true. Now, but to some degree. Now, the thing is, there's also Republicans who have invested in the Clean Air Act because it's in their interest against their competition. So because they're in conformance with the regulation and their competition is not. So they fund that. So they say, yes, let's bring down the emission standards because then I'll have all of it. And so there's a lot of money that has gone into that by people who don't care about the earth, but they care about their profits. And so he's also pissing off the people who care about their profits more than his earth. So and you can see how it's in our interest, though, eventually. Somehow, if it's essentially a move that way where it has to dawn on you that this planet has to keep going forward, and you have to have people for customers, so you can't kill everyone. Basic premises like that. And for me, I see in Trump's personality, he won a lot of, the Americans that, the international community doesn't appreciate, the ones who are overprivileged, who aren't as smart or as good as they say they are, basically, and think that they can just sort of wish away their problems onto someone else. And I think that's pretty apparent if you see Trump's business record, because that's the other thing I find hilarious is how this guy is known for fraud cases, bankruptcies, and all these other things because he doesn't manage his company. He has other people who do it, and it goes all haywire. In terms of the environment, it's probably going to be the same thing. He's just going to think it's like deregulation is the way to go, and whatever, and this and that, and that's as simple as it is. But obviously, it's not. So, and I mean, being in a green technology ourselves, we have to pay attention to all these things. And so, there's a lot of regulations, especially in the United States ports, they're heavier than people realize. There's things like in California, they're eliminating how many diesel trucks can go into the port. And their goal is to make it all electric. And now here in California, that's what we're doing, and then that's what they're setting the bar at internationally in things like the Kyoto Pact. You know, and so you can see in Europe, they have their different phases of clean air initiatives that also are going to progress over time. And this all affects how technology works. So in a sense, that's basically making companies make better equipment, better products, safer products for us to use in terms of cars and such like that. And so there's a lot of money and time that's went into this that he's really going contradictory to, even though he's saying he's for businesses. You know, even not caring about the planet and how they actually kind of do. And so that's the types of non sequitur, you know, hypocrisies that are just apparent. It's only been a couple of weeks here. It's too amazing.
Some of the way people act with him, it reminds me of North Korea, where a farmer that farms rice just ate his sister, and he's still praising, you know, Kim Jong, you know? It's like, I just ate my sister,
mm-hmm.
but I still love the pure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it reminds
me. It does. I mean, cause especially with the whole bringing the family, you know, as my cabinet people, it's like, whoa. We're not. We specifically fought against the monarchy in this country and company.
And here's the other thing: in 4 years, like he's gonna do an honest election in eight. Like he's gonna do an honest election. I mean, yeah, right. Honest my ass. There's no way.
Yeah, that's true. And this one. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the election, though, because this is one of the things I was watching, you know, up to the election, looking at the normal predictive algorithms, you know, that other people use, they want to have in a sense, and looking at things, with all rights and purposes, the votes probably should have came in under the Democratic banner. And I'm not a Clinton fan, you know, maybe, but it just looks that way. And then when the screens start reporting, it's Trump's, before they close, before the districts with the highest populations have closed. So it's not about, like, oh, yeah, it's just it's obvious it's going that way, as people think. We're talking about the difference between the outskirts of say, someplace like Boise, you know, somewhere in Idaho, versus Boise itself. You know, and that closed, you know, tend to be 3 hours later than most of the regular polls. And so they're reporting these things, and it's influencing other voters as this timeline moves across the United States. And that's all a computer. And so, in a sense, the computer told everyone who the president was, especially considering the physical votes are never actually counted. Everyone assumes, oh, there's this scanning process and this and that, and there's the digital files go to the White House or wherever it's supposed to go. But the whole thing is you never actually see the ballots, you'll never actually count it. So we're all talking about digital information, and we just got done talking about how digital information could be hijacked in various creative ways. So why does the American public assume that it wasn't hijacked and changed? You know?
Well, when I woke up that night, I figured she was going to win, and, you know, of course, I don't like her that much either. But I was for Bernie. But when I woke up and I saw he won, I swear, it felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. Like, I felt like I was in another reality. It felt like the outer limits. It was the outer limits when I woke up from that sleep and saw the TV. I just couldn't believe it.
Hey, yeah, it went exactly as I predicted on the show. I said if he goes up against Clinton or anyone else but Bernie, he's going to win. And had it been Bernie, I really am fully confident that Bernie would be the president, but he dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, well, the DNC did that. And the media, I mean, part of me likes watching the media now just to see them suffer. It's like I find entertainment in watching them now. It's like they're still shell-shocked. Like, that's what you get for what you did to Bernie. Now you want to do town halls with Bernie everywhere. Now? Shouldn't you have done that a long time ago? Now you like Bernie? But,
Which is interesting to me, just to jump real quick, because, I mean, you know, watching even Bernie Sanders' campaign and listening to what he's talking about, and even before him was Ron Paul, right? So very similar type of philosophy. Now, when you look at that philosophy in terms of proposed policy, it's almost exactly like the Bushes. It is still a type of business friendly, which includes how I said all these different tax breaks and regulation stuff, it isn't that bad. It releases a lot of those. It also is hoping on the goodness of American public's heart that the private entities are going to provide what we would think as public services. So in a sense, it's pretty much the same type of fascism thing, because it's still a private corporation handling the American populace's business that we want to do ourselves, which is exactly like the Federal Reserve. So this is where so you got to watch these fine prints, you know, and you can see where I'm not saying that Bernie would be any worse than Trump. In fact, it'd probably be more peaceful on the sense, but just like the Bushes or even especially Obama, like how subtle these things can be. These earth-shaking policies, they just go quietly by everyone. So that's the thing, the luxury that Trump obviously doesn't have. He's not sneaking anything by people because of how he already started. And so at least Bernie would have snuck some stuff by him. They would have, you know, helped Pfizer, and, you know, Chevron and all those companies, you know.
Well, I just felt like from Bernie that he cared. It's like from Hillary, I didn't feel anything, and from Trump, I didn't feel anything. Just like I resonated with him, I felt like he actually gave a crap. He seemed to be coming more from a Christ consciousness, and Hillary, of course, is out for herself, and then Trump was more like a Roman emperor.
I agree that Bernie Hawes has more compassion, you know, apparently than the other candidates, for sure.
Definitely. Well, one thing that we got to get into, and hopefully Jay can squeeze something in here, but I got to get this in because I put it in the title, is Super Soldiers. I put up an article recently, and it showed the Russians made these, like, crazy Terminator-looking androids. And I don't think there's any human components involved, but they're, like, the weirdest high-tech robots. And they're like, showed them playing video games and stuff, and... You know, and apparently the next phase is to, you know, teach them how to kill and war. It was pretty bone-chilling. Like, there's actual video of them training and stuff in Russia. And just crazy. But I'm just kind of curious about what's going on in the super soldier scene. And who's the guy's show I've been on? I couldn't remember his name. Who's the guy in the white van?
Oh, Dave Corso?
Yeah. I know he's one of them. I know I've interviewed Aaron before, and we talked to Anya about him, but anytime we ever do talk about him on some level, some kind of weird soap opera chaos breaks out. So, but what's going on with all that now? Are there still a lot of new super soldier stories and stuff like that going around? Is it pretty much old school news now?
As far as I know, there doesn't seem like there's that many new people who came up who genuinely have some experience other than... And because of the advancement of what the research was, because ultimately it comes down to types of research to create new weapons or new protocols for, you know, military purposes and commoditization. So at one point, I'm 38 right now, with my group, it seems like we were one of the bridges of the physical stuff, the physical trauma, versus the digital trauma, where they're using technology to project it in your mind instead of having witnessed a bunch of murders, because it's a lot cheaper that way, you know? So, and quicker, in a sense. So, what I've seen is the progression from what I was introduced to works into all the subliminal entrainment that goes on without people knowing, like I mentioned the Google thing. That's just one thing that company is doing. You know, these different entities who've been around, because some of them are just conglomerates and think tanks and all these other stuff that are technically the ones that have it, but they are owners in some of these big companies and such, and they have the access to these different, you know, power grids, for instance. And so these different impulses are, in a sense, what is controlling people's minds, you know, and it's more true and a little more scary than I think people realize, because there's no law against it. So there's patents filed by major corporations like McDonald's to make you like their fries more. You know, there's things in Coke machines that make you think you're thirsty. There's all kinds of these little subliminals, because there really is no law against them. And so the Super Soldier Project, from what I recall, had a lot to do with that kind of stuff. And I don't even necessarily like calling it the Super Soldier Project, because it's a carryover from the paperclip project to have to do with kind of existential research and how to create a better soldier. And so there's different things, there's different aspects of that. And so like the robotics is a whole other ball of wax. Especially, you know, we have the people also recognizing that there's some kind of android component to some of these far-out stories. And so for myself, it made sense hearing various whistleblowers who had faced some pretty out there things, like one in particular, like the Heather material that you can find, I think about Project Camelot. That story sounds a lot like something I've seen. And what I've seen in that regard looks a lot like movies that are coming out now. Like there's a sci-fi movie called The Machine. There's Ex Machina. There's a couple other ones like that. Yeah.
I love that Ex Machina. That was a trip out, buddy. Westworld. That was the stuff going on in Westworld. That was some crazy robot stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And because, you know, knowing that we have 3D printers on our desktop now, it's like, well, that came from somewhere, and someone spent all their time and money on doing something even cooler. So it's not as outlandish as it may seem when you factor in some of these other things or those perceived hurdles. Well, if they were removed, well, if you could do that.
Did you see Westworld?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, and that made sense to me. Yeah, that made sense to me because, okay.
I was just going to say, let me want some robo-hookers after that, buddy.
Yeah, no kidding, because that's usually one of the first things people will say. Why? Because they can make money off of it. And so is it going to happen? Yeah, it is. And so,
Japan.
Exactly.
Already got weird robots that do you and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the funny thing to me is that when I this is why it kind of confused me. Am I making this up or not? Because how you keep hearing in all these stories, like the androids who are created, that are conscious in a sense, like in Westworld, eventually kind of get manic depressed. So, so that tells us a little bit about what it is to be alive, right? And so that to me is just entertaining and kind of funny. But when you outside of that, when you get things, you know, promoted in the media, and it looks like fantasy, it's probably trying to tell you something because those are also recruitment tools. You know, like there's the new Call of Duty video game that just came out, and one of the main characters in that is an android. And it doesn't look human, but it's humanoid. It kind of looks like the DARPA-bot. And so in that sense, they're trying to tell you, you know, hey, you want to play with one of these things too someday? You know, they're seeing who will pass these books.
Well, Jay, you got anything you want to squeeze in? We got about 4 or 5 minutes, probably about 4.
So we're talking about androids. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but there is a rumor that a Blade Runner sequel is coming out or is about to be filmed at some.
Yeah, they released the trailer for it. It's happening. It's going on. Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty cool. Androids are pretty neat, but the whole sex trade thing is one of the biggest billion-dollar industry, so it does not surprise me if Japan's already got, you know, sex all robots out there that are ready to, you know, hit the market.
Well, in terms of what I hear in my experience and research from the Black Project, it sounds like China and the United States are the ones that are ahead of that right now. That's one of the more hush-hush topics in terms of what gets people in trouble. It's frightening on so many levels for a lot of people. So I can understand why.
But I don't see why it's frightening. I mean, you know, there's a lot of news stories about, you know, sex abuse and the trafficking of human sex slave trade. And, you know, having the robots that do that, if they're, you know, eventually they won't be so expensive, might reduce some of that human abuse that's going on around the planet.
Yeah, definitely would, yeah. And at that point, you have to ask, is that prostitution? Yeah, probably not, I guess not. But then someone else might say it might be because it's that android consciousness and it is conscious, and if not, how do we recognize that versus one that is? Well, it brings up all those kinds of intellectual questions that I'm sure would be almost insurmountable right now in the general public considering the elected Trump. And we have some other people in power in different countries as well, you know? They're kind of the same thing.
You know, I tried to get one of those real dolls for the show. I wrote them, and they said, no, it costs too much.
Oh, yeah, that was expensive.
Those real dolls. They said no, but I actually wrote them and had a conversation with the creators, and they said it cost too much. So it's like $5,000 a piece.
Wow.
I said, but I would promote it. But, hey, I tried. It's got to get me some pleasure.
Yeah, if you can get a punch card there, how many listeners kind of give the discount there, you know?
Ultimate pleasure, baby. Well, we got about 1 minute, and what do you got? You got a website or anything you need to plug? Go ahead.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Yeah, you can check out, you know, what some of the stuff about my company and my products at nonoxbox.com. That's an X, nonoxbox.com. That's for the pollution reduction device. Pretty fun and exciting in terms of its application. And then I also have the health component or therapy component for people with, in the form of peppermints usually and things like that at thehollowtree.com, H-O-L-O.com. And you can find me on Facebook too if you look for my name if you want to contact me directly for anything. Or just get those links again. So, and I'll just send it again. That's nonoxbox.com and thehollowtree.com.
All right, we appreciate it. Great to have you back on the show. Some of that old school kick in the tail, bringing back some of that old school energy in the house. Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
All right, man, we appreciate it. You're listening to United Public Radio 107.7 FM, New Orleans. Coming up next, Supernatural Substation. We'll see you all next week for some fiction, old school horror, nostalgia, Lovecraft, and Stephen King, and all kinds of weird with Judophiles. Everybody have a good weekend. Watch out for those robot Putin drone android murdering Terminator machines coming soon to America. Good night, everybody.